culture, discipline, accountability.
Mistreatment, misrepresentation.
Knowledge is power, y'all.
There has to be accountability.
This pandemic of toxic work culture and mistreatment has got to stop.
The podcast for federal employees by federal employees.
What's up? What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Fed Up. I'm your host, Ron Speakman. And today we got a first here on the show, as our guest today was in management. That's right, management. And while we all know and hear just how bad mostly all management within the Postal Service can be, especially towards carriers and clerks, you are about to find out that the same mistreatment and willful misconduct we all deal with, management themselves can deal with as well from their own peers, which is crazy. Make no mistake, management acts on behalf of the agency itself when they constantly promote and reward people in management for the constant hostile and toxic work environments they are responsible for creating at their own offices, stations, buildings, and under their own supervision. But to also treat their own peers like that as well, what kind of message does that send? Well, I'll tell you what kind of message it sends. It sends a message that screams loud and clear that there is an issue, no, a pandemic of toxicity that starts at the top and works its way down into the entry-level management, and that there are no lines management will not cross, even with other management personnel, to get what they want, or in this case, to retaliate simply because they just don't like a particular person, regardless of the reason. And this is exactly what happened to my guest today, who will be talking about all the mistreatment she's endured, which includes being bullied, harassment, constant and deliberate targeting and retaliation, which ultimately led to anxiety, depression, PTSD, and being out of work for it, and eventually being forced into retirement through OPM, which again is federal disability retirement, which all is caused by her immediate management personnel that she worked with or reported to as management herself. We will even talk about the language and what is needed and how our guest got her claim and accepted conditions approved with the Department of Labor OWCP. So without further ado, let's welcome in our guest, Melissa Waddle from Illinois. Melissa, welcome to the show.
Hi, Ron. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you for being here. Now, Melissa, before we get started here, I just wanted to confirm for the audience what your exact title was while you were employed with the Postal Service. You were an SDO, which is a supervisor of distribution operations out of the Quad City Processing and Distribution Facility in Milan, Illinois. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And how long have you held that position for?
Well, I held that position for, I have to think here, 10 years.
10 years. And that's the total time you were in management as well?
No, I was in management a little bit longer. I was in management for another 4 years, so 14 years.
So you held another position before that. What was your title before that? I'm just curious.
Before that, this was before I was in management. I was actually a carrier. I went to management from a carrier.
Oh,
but
okay.
My final management position was a supervisor of delivery, customer services. There we go.
So you were actually on the workroom floor with the carriers.
Yes.
Gotcha. And then you switched over to the SDO and the plant operations, right?
Flip-flop that. I was SDO first and then customer service.
Oh, gotcha. All right. So you actually have a broad understanding of what the Postal Service is about, both as management, but also as a carrier.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. I remember those days.
And being in management most of your career, can you tell us what your job as an SDO entailed and what exactly were your main duties and responsibilities in that position, again, as the supervisor of distribution operations?
Well, my duties there were basically making sure the mail got out the door. I mean, I did some light scheduling, like daily scheduling of areas of operation. My areas of operation included the manual operations and the dock, so the mail handlers as well.
Okay.
And yeah, it was never boring, I can tell you that.
I bet not. And who did you answer to? Meaning, who was the immediate supervisor or manager that you actually reported to? Did you work with other management as well in this position?
Yeah.
And what was the order as far as the title of position or chain of command goes, if you will?
Okay, so chain of command went, my direct supervisor would have been the manager of distribution operations, or MDO, and then above that person would have been the plant manager.
Okay, but you were the third one then. You were right below the MDO as the SDO, correct?
Correct, yep.
Gotcha. Now, Melissa, from what I gathered simply by our conversations over the past few weeks, it seems that you were very, very good at your job. So good, in fact, that the employees you supervised went above and beyond for you as their manager, more so than they would for any other supervisors or managers.
Yes.
Now, I know that a lot of my audience listening here has an issue with their management that they work with, and rightfully so, right?
Right.
But as I talked about before in previous episodes, there is management out there that we refer to as these legends, these unicorns, right? Meaning they actually treat their employees like a person rather than a number or a quote-unquote warm body, as opposed to most management who treats their employees like shit. For my listeners out there, especially as you being previous management, can you share some instances where your employees went above and beyond for you and why they did that for you?
The best example I can give of the employees going above and beyond is when I actually have a couple. I don't think I told you this one. We had a storm go through here one summer, and it was pretty bad. One knocked out power for a week. And so basically, I mean, we're sitting there at the plant with nothing to do. And I gathered up a crew, and it was all volunteers, and I had several volunteers who want to go with me. And we went to the next processing facility closest to us, which would have been Cedar Rapids. That's about an hour and a half drive. And we drove there, and we processed our own mail, that because our mail had to go to Cedar Rapids in order to get processed. They couldn't handle it. They didn't have the staff to handle the extra workload, but it had to get done. So yeah, we all volunteered and went, and I had plenty of volunteer to go with me. And then, this happened more towards the end of my stint there at QCPNDF, about the last year. We were understaffed, just like I'm sure everybody is out there. And we couldn't get stuff done, and we were staying late every night. And we had in our local that you had to tell the employees that if they had to stay, you had to tell them an hour before their shift ended. Otherwise, they could walk out the door if they wanted to. Now, I'd get busy sometimes, and I would not make it around, but my people knew if we weren't done, it wasn't going to get done if they walked out the door, and they stayed. Now, they wouldn't do that for the other supervisors. They told me several times that, you know, they didn't tell us in time. You weren't here. We left.
Wow.
And well, yes, they could do that. You know, I said, well, that was your right. You know what's right and wrong.
Yeah.
Like, we don't care. We don't respect her. We don't care.
Clearly, that speaks volumes right there. I mean, thank you for sharing that. Clearly, you are one of those legendary unicorns we talk about, right?
I think I am.
Yeah, absolutely. And from all of us, let me just say thank you for being you. We appreciate that. As
thank
much
you.
As I know your employees that you supervise appreciate it as well. So thank you. Absolutely. Got to get credit where credit's due, right?
Yeah. I'm not one to take that, though.
That's all right. You're going to take it here. We're going to say thank you again and again because we appreciate that. Doesn't go too often that we have people like you. Now, Melissa, let's get into your story here. I believe it was near the end of 2017. When your MDO, which is a manager of distribution operations, for those of you out there who don't know the terms yet, he actually retired. And you went to the plant manager and asked if you could cover that until they found someone to fill that spot permanently. But you also said you were going to apply for the job as well. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
And what did he say to you when you asked him that?
He said that he had already asked the supervisor of maintenance operations, the SMO, had already asked him to cover it. Now, this is somebody who had no experience whatsoever in operation. He was going to ask him to cover it. So I was a little irritated about that. And I remember saying to him, I said, so instead of asking us to compete for it, you're just automatically going to give it to somebody. Instead of asking, was anybody interested?
That's crazy. So now you got this new guy coming in here who knew nothing about the plant and its operations. Someone from a different craft, and they actually brought them in to do the position, not you?
Yep. He, like I said, he was maintenance. So,
wow. Yeah.
Knew nothing about our side of the house.
There must have been some GOBC, BBIT. Again, that's a good old boy click, boys back in town crew type shit happening, because I don't understand the process behind that. Why not put you in there who knows all this and the employees respect enough? You'll get more done. Anyway, despite all this, despite that happening, you still worked with that newly uneducated MDO and the plant manager as well by advising him, not only him, but them onto training him, so to speak. Is that correct? You kind of trained him?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And so December, everybody knows December in the post office is, you know, a madhouse.
And go time.
Yeah. You know, that's what we're working up to. Right. And, so yeah, I'm trying to help him. I'm trying to set us up to be as successful as possible. And I mean, I had the mail handler, so I had the dock, and that's the last operation of the night. And you know, it's got hard and fast deadlines. I mean, you have to meet these deadlines in order to be considered clear. So I'm trying to, you know, make everybody as successful as possible so I can, you know, get out the door at, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning instead of 4 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
You know, we get everything done and give the customers what they paid for and, you know, call it a good night.
Right. Exactly. Now tell me, was this newly appointed MDO, was he receptive to your advice and training?
Well, you know, to my face, he was. He was receptive to it. I'm thinking, as I'm watching him go down his line, I'm thinking, okay, he's doing what I've suggested because, I mean, we're not going to clear. More than likely, we're not going to clear anyway. But we're definitely not going to clear if he's not keeping his people. Nope. His people go walking out the door at 11 o'clock when shift ended. When tour's over, his people are walking out the door and mine are still there. Mine are irritated, first of all.
Well, exactly.
They get to walk out the door and my people are still there. And I'm like,
I would be pissed off too.
You know, he's the MDO.
Right, exactly.
I answer to him, not the other way around. I told him what needed to be done and he's not listening.
Wow.
So, you know, at that point, then I'm like, I'm going to the plant manager at that point.
So is it a fair assessment to say at this point, this is pretty much when the quote unquote campaign started against you, it seems. Talk to me about what this MDO was doing in regards to the job. Just as you said, like sending people home despite not being cleared. And for those of you who don't know what that term is, clearing refers to everything that is being collected that day has to go out that night. Is that correct?
That is correct. Okay. Yes.
I mean, but it's pretty much when the campaign started against you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can't even tell you why it started. It started with, and this was in December, it started with when I ran the clearance report at the end of the night that we had, I missed a box, a blue box. I missed that it had gotten scanned a minute early. And yeah, I got written up. I got a letter of warning.
So it was clear that this new MDO was not listening to what you had to say, despite you being there longer and knew what needed to be done on a daily basis. I mean, what do you think the reason is behind this?
I honestly do not know what the reason is behind that. And none of us could figure this out. Nobody in management in that building could figure out why, A, he wasn't listening, why he was the one who was put into that position, why the plant manager seemed to only be listening to this MDO and nobody else.
Yeah, it blows your mind.
Other than trying to get me out the door. And I did hear that from the mail handler union that was his goal.
You know what? I always, I say this to my kids, but also everybody else's kids. God gave you two ears and one mouth for a reason. So do more listening and shut your mouth. Oh, man.
Yeah, I like that.
But, I mean, like you said, later that month, like you said, you ran a report at the end of the shift. You missed the collection box. You scanned the one. It was like a minute early, I believe it was. I mean, we know what the minute early is when we miss the collection boxes or we scan too early. We got to go back out there and do it again. But in 10 years of running that report, not once have you missed anything in the time span. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Not once. And I caught a lot. There are a lot I caught that were either missed or scanned early, and I had to send people back.
Yep.
Never missed one until that night.
I was going to say, yet this one time, you know, you get a LOW, which throws you out there, a letter of warning. That's what LOW is. But you got a letter of warning, which you told the plant manager that you thought was a bit excessive, correct?
Correct, yep.
What did he say? Like, when you told him that was excessive, I mean, obviously there's this long journey of mistreatment from your MDO and plant manager at that point. But I want to get into that a little bit more. What was his response?
He really didn't have a good acceptable response. He did not think it was excessive, and he wanted to make sure that it was that they weren't missed again. He did not have a really an acceptable response.
So he pretty much didn't care, right?
Correct.
So
yeah.
After this letter of warning, not long after, a little over a month, your MDO quit scheduling efficient staff to cover your area of responsibility, which again was manual operations. And he did that by switching the days of your PSEs, which again, for those of you out there familiar with the terms, PSEs are postal support employees. Talk to me about that. What started happening here?
Well, for some reason, he started giving our PSEs Monday nights and Friday nights.
What?
As their SDOs.
Oh, those are the two heaviest days. Jesus.
Absolutely. Yep.
What?
Two heaviest days of the week, and he's letting them sit at home. And I'm, you know, forcing people to work overtime. I'm forcing people who aren't on any overtime list to work overtime. And they're mad. They're working. They don't want to work. And the PSEs are sitting at home.
Oh, my God.
and we definitely aren't clearing those nights. I mean, we don't have every person available
right.
to,
exactly.
you know, to utilize. And it, so we're not clearing. And so I go to the plant manager and I'm like, look, these guys are PSEs. They don't have a set schedule.
Right.
We need them here on Mondays and Fridays. Give them Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday off, but not Monday and Friday. Saturday even. I mean, Saturdays were, you know, not that bad.
Right.
And he's like, okay, I'll make sure that you have the staff you need. I'll make sure that he quits doing that. Nope, never did.
Never
did. He sent out an email and nope. And he sent out an email saying that the PSEs were not to be scheduled or not to have Mondays and Fridays as their SDOs. And the next week the schedule comes out and here's, you know, Monday and Friday they had them as their schedule.
Wait a minute. It's so again, the chain of command would be you, then the MDO, and the high one who both y'all answer to is the plant manager, correct?
Correct.
So the plant manager is sending this to the newly appointed MDO, and he's not following instructions.
Yep, absolutely.
Jeez.
and I
only
brought
in
it
the
to
post
his
office.
Attention. Oh, absolutely. And I brought it to the plant manager's attention that your instructions are not being followed. Look at this. Look at the schedule. Nothing changed. Absolutely nothing changed.
Well, there's one thing that changed that blows my fucking mind here, and that's after all this went down and transpired, you told the plant manager about this, that plant manager then promoted and made him the acting MDO permanently. Is that correct?
Yep.
Unbelievable. See, you get rewarded with bad, poor quality of work. Unreal.
Yep. Yep.
Wow.
Couldn't believe it. And nobody could believe it. We were all floored.
I could imagine.
We
oh, my
floored.
God. Now,
I can laugh about it now, but then, you know.
No, it's funny even today. This is crazy. Because I see this. We all see this in our own stations or wherever we are in the country. And I hear it a lot. I hear it more often because I talk to a lot of you guys across this country. And it's just management gets rewarded with poor behavior. I don't understand it. Anywhere else, you'd be fired and let go. Huh?
Yep. That was our mantra too, man.
Yeah.
Any place else, you'd be
see?
Fired.
Now, late that same month, late in January of 2018, after a while, this willful misconduct, unfair treatment, the lack of help that you had actually with the scheduling issues with the PSEs, which led to an almost daily norm of not clearing operations, which started basically affecting your health and created more stress, not just for you, I'm sure for some of your employees as well that you supervise, but especially being sabotaged the way you were. All this was also brought to the attention to the plant manager who said, just don't let it bother you. Is that correct?
Yep. That's exactly what he said.
So it was not only affecting your overall health and your well-being, but it was also affecting operations because you were not clearing on a near nightly basis.
Yep.
I mean, my guests and I talk about the mistreatment by management all the time. And here we are yet again with management creating a hostile and toxic work environment. And not only is it affecting your health and well-being of another manager, mind you, a coworker for them, but the fact that it's affecting operations, which is what management is supposed to be managing and supervising.
Uh-huh.
And they ignore that fact.
Yep.
Keep mistreating you. That's the part that got me like, what the fuck is going on here? What's wrong with this picture? management rather create problems than solutions. It makes no sense to me at all. Mm-hmm. That's the shit that bothers me. It gets me angry, man. Not just with your management here, but management everywhere who act like that. These are the type of people, basically, that we don't need in management. Get them the fuck out of there.
Yep.
They don't deserve their positions, let alone deserve to be supervising anyone or anything if that's the way that they manage. USPS got a real problem here when it comes to why they hire and train as management. In fact, I'd say the training upper management and HR gives these people in management are just as guilty as these people who are getting this training and producing this poor management style. Again, leadership comes from the top, man. If poor management and training comes from the top in this agency, which again, the United States Postal Service, it's going to create poor management at the local levels across this country. We see it all the time, which goes to what I say in other episodes as well, which is USPS doesn't have a recruitment problem. It has a retention problem created from the agency and management itself because of the toxic culture it promotes from within. I mean, that's unbelievable, Melissa. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I'm sorry for that tangent, but I had to say all that. That was a mouthful. It gets me mad, especially when management is treating their own like that. I mean, that speaks higher volumes, I would say, than when they're treating us like that.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's your coworker. That's your teammate. I don't understand.
Hey, if you ever figure it out, let me know, because we couldn't figure it out either. I mean...
well, hopefully one day they'll figure it out and get their heads out their asses. But in late of May that same year, which again 2018, you were actually disciplined for not clearing operations.
Yep.
Talk to me about that.
Yeah, so I got disciplined for not clearing operations. We had 66 bags, and that's a bag is, you know, those, I don't know how well people pay attention that are in the offices, but like the orange priority sacks that come in,
okay,
of your parcels, or when the unit's dispatching like your express, the big express pouches.
Right.
Okay, so that's what I'm talking about, bags. It wasn't express, though. Express had gone out long before.
Right.
But priority pouches. So we had 66 of those. That holds quite a bit. That didn't make the truck. And I made that call to cut it off because we had to get our truck moving. The truck went to FedEx, and if the truck did not make its scheduled time at FedEx, FedEx would not take it. It would sit there until the next day. So I'm like, okay, better to fail a little bit than to fail at all.
Right.
So that was kind of our mantra, basically almost every night. So we had 66 bags that didn't make it because we didn't have enough staff to ensure that we cleared, because, you know, it was a Monday night, and why would we have the staff on a Monday night?
Right.
And yeah, so since that didn't make the truck, I got a 7-day suspension they were trying to give me.
7-day suspension. Now, during that time they were trying to give that to you, tell the audience what you discovered there when you were out and leave on April.
Oh yeah, when I was out and leave in April, the supervisor who covered me also did not clear. And not only did it not clear, you had the MDO, you know, the manager, lying about why it didn't clear, saying that the truck was 100% full, which the truck was not. We had to take a picture of the truck, and he took the picture and sent the picture out to the rest of management, showing this truck clearly had plenty of room to get everything on. He just didn't do it. And no discipline. And it was at least twice the number of bags that I failed. And no discipline. And I know that because I asked. I asked the supervisor who was in charge, were they disciplined for it? And they said nope. So it's just me.
No.
Yep. They said nope.
Just
they were
you.
Not. Yep. Just me.
So you actually asked the supervisor herself. Yep. And that's when you learned that they did not get disciplined, and the MDO lied about clearing, which means he had to falsify information or go against procedures to show that clearing did happen, correct?
Yep.
Yet again, no accountability there. Talk to me about that, though. For you, there was no proof as far as you not clearing?
Well, they have proof because we filled out a report, you know, saying we had to do this nightly, saying what did clear, what didn't clear. And I mean, I didn't lie. I didn't lie because right. It's very, very easy to verify. All the plant manager would have to do was do a walk around of the workroom floor and see, oh, there's 66 bags sitting there that didn't make it.
Do the walk around, check the report, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I did not falsify my reports. If we didn't clear, we didn't clear.
Exactly. Yeah. But management, the MDO lied about clearing, and he did falsify information despite mm-hmm. seeing all those bags that were left there. And like you said, all you had to do was walk around and find them. That's crazy, man. And that's pretty much when the he said, she said battle ensued regarding your disciplinary action, right?
Completely different situation there about the he said, she said.
Okay.
Completely different. But there was another he said, she said, and 14-day suspension.
Uh-oh. Talk to me. Talk to me. What's going on?
Yep. Tried to give me a 14-day suspension because one of the maintenance crew, who now remember our MDO came from maintenance, right?
Right.
So one of the maintenance guys tells the MDO, the newly appointed MDO, that I said I was going to make him and the plant manager pay for not making me the MDO. Never happened.
So he pretty much said you were going to sabotage operations to get back at him.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. So at this point, this is when I start finding out, you know, that the MDO has said his goal is to give me enough discipline that I will be fired and I can't go anywhere else. That, you know, basically they were just out to get me. And again, none of us knew why. None of the other managers could figure out why. What the problem was with me specifically.
And now you actually had several witness statements written for you, correct?
Oh yeah, absolutely. A lot of my employees, they gave statement after statement after statement. You know, never have we heard her say this. Never have we seen her even indicate that she might want to sabotage. The fact that I was actually working the mail right there alongside them, which we all know is a big no-no for management. However, when we don't have the employees,
yep, you know, do what you got to do to get it done, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, so I had lots of witness statements. Nah, they didn't care.
So the same problems are happening within the delivery side of things at our offices across this country. The same thing is happening in the plants with distribution and operations, it sounds like, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was there any kind of mediation held over this disciplinary action?
Yes, yes. So, I mean, we don't have, management doesn't have the grievance process. Our process is mediation.
Correct.
So we had the mediator come in. And, you know, we kind of battled it out and, you know, they talk to you as a group collectively, then they split you up management. And then of course the manager who's being disciplined, you know, you go off into separate rooms and the mediator goes back and forth between us and finally negotiates that it's going to be a job discussion. And as you all know, job discussion is not grievable. There's really not a whole lot you can do about that. So job discussion is kind of what I got out of this, but after it was all said and done, the mediator asked to speak to me and to my representative alone. And he said, do not give them any reason to discipline you. I'm like, I don't. And he said, well, it is clear to me that they are out to get you. And I do not know why. He said, it's very clear from what they've said and what their actions are that they've got it in for you.
That's crazy. That's crazy. Tell me, Melissa, do you guys have a union in your position?
It's not a union. It's an association. To me, they're pretty much useless.
Hey, that's not the worst that we'll hear people say about them.
Yeah. Yeah. To me, they're pretty much useless, but yes, there is an association. I think from what I hear, there's a new one that's a little bit stronger than what NAPS was, but
right.
I don't know. I don't have to deal with that anymore.
You're not alone with the union stuff there, though, because there's a lot of people who feel like that about their own unions as well, whatever mm-hmm. craft they're in. Tell me, Melissa, how did this all start making you feel when once all this started happening, you've been going through the constant mistreatment, the harassment, the he said, she said stuff, which, again, this falls under dignity and respect, bullying, workplace violence. How did that start to make you feel? What kind of effect was it starting to have on you?
Well, let's see. I couldn't sleep. I've always been one of those people who've had a hard time going to sleep. But once I went to sleep, I stayed asleep. I was getting 2 or 3 hours of sleep a night. You know, it'd take me forever to fall asleep. And I was waking up, like, in a panic. And driving to work, I'm, I I would pull over literally almost every day, pull over to be sick on my way to work. It was just, I was paranoid. I was paranoid going in there because what was going to happen today? What were they going to do today? What was the next thing going to be? And so finally, I went to my doctor and said, okay, I need something. And he's like, yeah, you need to be off work.
How long did he take you out of work for?
Well, that was my family doctor. So he took me out of work for 2 weeks and he of course recommended a psychiatrist and all that. So that's when I started that down that road, psychology and psychiatrist and all that.
And then when you came back from that 2 week absence, that's when you were told that your day off would be changed to Sunday because the 204B didn't want to work Sunday. Talk to me about that.
So we had a 204B who was covering another supervisor's position. That supervisor actually just quit coming to work back in February. We're talking June now. And so 204B is covering that position and doesn't want to work Sundays. And
wait a minute, okay, you're the senior SDO on the tour.
Yes, absolutely. I was the senior management on the tour. I was senior to the MDO as well.
Right.
So I was senior management on the tour. And so yeah, they're telling me they're going to change my day off to Sunday. And I'm like, no, I'm not working Sundays. I didn't mind doing it when you needed somebody to help. I didn't mind doing it for a temporary temporary assignment. But no, I'm not going to work Sundays.
That 204B, ironically, was actually covering the vacant position because you just had a previous SDO quit. He just quit showing up, probably to similar treatment, I'm taking it. But the positions and the days off were Tuesday and Wednesday, right? Okay.
Yep.
And you told the MDO she was not working you're not working Sundays. You called the plant manager at home with tour one MDO?
Tour one MDO.
And you were actually tour three, right?
Correct. Yep, I'm tour three.
And the manager, tell me what the manager said.
So the manager, she's there to be a witness because I know at this point I need a witness to everything that happens with me. And she and I were friends. So she's in there listening and the plant manager tells me, hand to God, I swear, that place runs smoother without me.
Wow.
and I'm like, oh, you think so? And he said, yep. Like, okay. And I hung up and the MDO looks at me and she says, you need to leave right now. For whatever reason, they have it out for you. She said, and I can't figure it out. I mean, her jaw dropped when she heard the plant manager say that. Her jaw dropped. Because we all know, I would go out on detail. I would go out on detail to another office. And they actually pulled me back from my detail because it ran so poorly without me. Not only were my manual operations not clearing, automation, which wasn't even my area of responsibility, but I checked it every night to make sure we were on track because, as I said, it feeds my final operation. And so I need to make sure we're on track and I'm getting out of here and we're getting cleared. So automation wasn't clearing either. And not only was it not clearing, the managers didn't know they were leaving stuff behind. So failed miserably. And they pulled me back from my detail to come back to my tour.
Of course, because you got shit done.
Right. Yep. And yeah, I don't even. So I started off on this tangent. I don't even remember what started it. Days off.
We're talking about the days, Tuesday and Wednesdays. You actually called the plant manager at home. You were talking about the tour one MDO. And she even pretty much agreed with you that things ran smoother when you were there with your tour on tour three.
Yep.
The tour one MDO told you that they got it out for you for whatever reason. And you basically should get out of there. Everyone in management. Go ahead. Now, I was going to say, everyone in management could see it clear as day that they were out to get you. But to this day, no one knows why. Do you even have an idea of why yet, looking back?
I really do not have an idea of why. I don't know. I mean, the MDO who came on, I really didn't have a lot of dealings with him. I didn't, we didn't have any kind of a love him or hate him relationship because we didn't really know each other. I could not even begin to fathom a reason. Other than, I mean, I'm good at my job. I don't know if they were threatened by that.
They could have been.
They might have had somebody they wanted in my position. That I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's a mystery.
It could all be that. But I just know that after I left, things weren't all that great either, I heard. So.
Yeah, of course not. Look who's running the helm. You know what? People get jealous and there's a lot of jealousy and even some envy going out there. And it just proves how dangerous and toxic those two things can be because it seems they were jealous. I mean, let's face it. You were the only manager there that the employees went above and beyond for and did what they did. You, not the others.
Yep.
And I think that maybe, right, they had ill feelings towards that, jealousy and whatever have you, and they were pissed off and angry, and you would get things done. You were making them look bad. And now, I hate to bring this into play because I'm not one of these types to usually do this and pull the card, but listen, a female doing better than a male at their job. Some males, they can't put their, you know, they can't wrap their minds around that. They can't conceive that a woman can do better at the same job that they're doing. And that's, I feel that may have been the exact situation here, that you were so great at your job. Everyone liked you because you put in the work. You led by example, right? You let your actions do the speaking for you, not just your words. And I think they were threatened by that, to be honest, which especially as a man, I don't feel like that personally. Hey, if a woman's better than me at something, congratulations. I'll give you all the credit in the world, male or female. I don't give a shit who you are. But I know for a fact there are some people out there, and it goes both ways, men and women, but some women can do some things better than men, and they don't know how to handle that. So
that just floors me. I mean, we're all on the same team here. We're a team. It's not an I.
Right. It's a we. Exactly. That's how it should be at every station, not just in your place of work. Also, to your point where you were actually coming into work and you would have to pull over, you would have to throw up because all of this mistreatment that's been happening, right? All that you have so much anxiety built up that you would pull over and throw up. And that's due to all the stress and anxiety that you suffer from all this. I mean, again, you were referred to a psychiatrist, right? So you actually saw a psychologist as well later on. Late July of 2018. And at that point, you were seeing both the psychiatrist and the psychologist, and they have taken you out of work indefinitely due to your anxiety, depression, PTSD, all your mental things that you had going on, which was at the hands of all the stress that your management, your coworkers, basically pretty much promoted and caused for you. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Wow. I'm sorry you had to go through that, man.
Thank you.
And you actually, you did apply for OWCP, so you filed a claim, right?
Yep, in May of 2018. So like May 30th, 2018, I filed the claim. So, you know, right when my doctor took me off that two weeks.
I want to stop you. They actually tried to force you to use your own time at first, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
But you didn't, right?
No.
Good for you. So yeah, so OWCP, go ahead, continue with your story. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so I filed May 30th when I went out on that initial 2 weeks. I filed then because I could see it. I could see the writing on the wall.
Right.
You know? And So I filed and got denied because I didn't know what I needed to do.
Well, it actually did end up getting accepted, I believe. When was it? September of 2021?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. It took 3 years to get it accepted.
But you got it accepted. And I want to talk about that in a little bit of how you got it accepted for people out there so they know. I'm going to talk more about your accepted conditions and your ICD-10 codes and all that. But later on, now again, you started seeing a psychiatrist and a psychologist in 2018. This was mid, so June and July. In November of 2018, you were released to go back to work with restrictions. But not back at that plant that caused all these issues for you, right?
Right. Yeah, that was the only restriction.
Now, did you? Right. Okay. Now, did you use? Did you have an EEO attorney? Who was involved with this?
I did have an EEO attorney, but as that turns out, he really didn't do a whole lot for me. Right. But yes, I did have an EEO attorney at that point, and so I got released in November of 2018 to return to work. And December of 2018, I get an offer from our local HR here to go to an office that was, you know, about a 15-minute commute from where I lived, which was fine because, I mean, it was about the same to the plant. So I'm like, okay, that's comparable.
Well, that was for a supervisor delivery position, something that you did before, right?
Yes.
Got you.
And I accepted it. You know, okay, when can I start? You know, when should I show up? When should I report? You know, get with postmaster, blah, blah, blah. So I go with postmaster. She knows nothing about it. And so she's in touch with HR here, and you know, they start talking with the PUM and decided, oh no, we're going to post that position. They're going to post it.
Wow.
So if I want it, I have to compete, which I already know is not going to go well.
Right.
You know, so I'm like, no, I should not have to compete. You guys have to place me. You know, they weren't doing it. But we could give you this spot out here in this other place. It's, you know, a 40-minute drive for you.
Did you end up accepting that one?
I did. I told them that I didn't think that was a comparable offer, that I'm not the one who should have to drive 40
right.
minutes because
absolutely.
I didn't start this in the first place. But yes, I will accept it because I need to get back to work. And that was in January. And they didn't return me to work until May. And not only did they not return me to work till May, they also lied to me, you know, in that interim, saying that, well, the position was already filled. You didn't accept it. Yes, I did.
So it's fair to say up to this point, you've pretty much dealt with retaliation to a certain extent, threat of termination, harassment, bullying, workplace violence, zero tolerance, dignity and respect, all that wrapped up in one.
Yep.
Even an unsafe working environment, you can even argue that as well and put that in there. But you dealt with all of this from your own peers in management as a manager yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did.
Unfucking believable. It's not surprising, but it's still unbelievable.
Yeah.
Wow. I know we were a little bit all over the place here. The dates are kind of hard to keep up to date, but I think the audience has the gist of it as far as the treatment that you experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you did a good enough job painting the picture here.
Uh-huh.
So I want to get back to the OWCP aspect of this, okay?
All right.
So again, you filed. It took a while to get accepted. It was actually finally accepted in 2021, I believe it was, right?
Yes.
But you originally filled out the paperwork. You did a CA2?
Yes.
Which that makes sense because a CA2 would be what is happening over the course of two or more work shifts, whereas a CA1 is for over the course of one work shift, one incident, right? This is a bunch of incidents.
Yes.
So you got denied the first time. You were off from work from June 2018 to May 2019. Luckily, you did have AL to cover most of that time, except the last 2 months, you were actually able to get unemployment. But of course, it didn't cover a lot, but it was still something to say the least. Talk to me about that real quick. How did you end up getting unemployment those last 2 months?
So I don't know how it is for every state. I mean,
sure.
In Illinois, though, I mean, I was employed, but I was not being scheduled any hours. And because I wasn't being scheduled any hours, I qualified for unemployment.
Yep.
And I don't know if they would have, I don't know if they would have gotten in touch with the post office to see if they can test it or not. That I don't know how that process worked. But yeah, that was approved fairly quickly.
So you actually reached out to them?
To unemployment. I didn't reach out to the post office at all.
That's what I mean. The unemployment, correct.
Yep.
Yeah, so if you're employed and they don't have work for you, you didn't quit. They're just not giving you hours. Yes, you should be allowed to file unemployment. And I'm glad that we got to talk about this because I get these questions sometimes. And personally, I don't know because I was never in that situation. So finally having yourself in there, I'm sorry you still had to go through that, but to help shed some light on that, that's good for the audience because it's good to know. Keep that in mind that, listen, if you're out and you're waiting, there's no more COP. Well, maybe you didn't even get COP. You don't have time to use, like in this case from Alyssa, and they're not giving you your hours. Contact unemployment. So I'm glad you actually did that and reached out to them. I've actually worked out in your favor. Again, it doesn't cover a lot, but it was something to help you through that last 2 months at least. Right.
Yep.
Now, during that 2 months, though, you talked to a federal attorney for OWCP who helped you with your mental diagnosis. And I think they were out of Savannah, Georgia.
Yes.
And then OPM, you use somebody for your federal disability for your OPM out of Pine Federal in Texas, correct?
Yes.
Were those situations pretty much clear cut and dry for you?
No. OPM wasn't, or was. That went fairly quickly. It was OWCP was not.
And it's not surprising because they deny. So they want every little thing. If language is not met, then hey, they're going to keep denying. Good thing is they're going to tell you when they give you a denial what exactly is needed, which one of those five basic elements isn't being met. And that took you 3 years, I believe it was, in order to get that claim accepted. But I want to talk about how quickly did you get OPM accepted?
Okay, so my attorney submitted that at the end of August of last year, and mm-hmm. January of this year was when it was finalized.
So that did go pretty much fairly quick. The average time they say is about 9 months. 5 to 9 months is the average time. And that can be with a denial. I mean, I got a response back in 3 months and something, it was on our part actually, was not submitted. So that was our fault. So I would have got accepted in 3 month mark, which was good. However, it did end up taking me to the eight and a half, give or take, because I had to appeal, send in the paperwork that I missed. It was an easy fix. Unfortunately, that easy fix still cost me a couple months. So that's good. That fairly went quick. But back to the OWCP, that didn't go quick. But once it did, it got accepted through the CA2. Again, I want to. This is important for the audience to know. You filed a CA2 in regards to your conditions there, right? And that was your anxiety, depression, and PTSD. And the CA2. Now, the NADRA report language is important, but the big thing here is you did a CA2 and you were accepted for ICD-10 code F as in Frank 4310, which is PTSD. The other one was for F as in Frank 339, which was major depressive disorder recurrent. Mm-hmm. And did you have anxiety in there as well?
No. I was diagnosed with that, but that was not an accepted.
Okay, gotcha. So that wasn't in the accepted conditions for OWCP, but you were still diagnosed with that, which I'm sure that helped your cases as well get accepted on those other two, PTSD and depressive order. Depressive disorder recurrent.
Yeah.
That's a tongue twister.
Yeah.
But I want to talk about the NARA report and the language here that your doctor, your treating physician here, the psychiatrist and the psychologist who both wrote extensive notes? I know one wrote a NARA report and the other, his extensive notes were used.
My psychologist is the one who wrote the extensive notes because, of course, she had the closest relationship with me.
Sure.
Because that's who I saw the most. The psychiatrist, I only saw him basically for the meds that I was on. But it was their psychiatrist that OWCP sent me to who I think really clinched it there.
The second opinion doctor, right?
Yes, yes.
Tell me what happened.
So I get this notification. This is funny because I never even got it in the mail. I just happened to get a text telling me that I had an appointment with this person, reminding me. It was a text reminder of the appointment that I had with the psychiatrist that I didn't even know I had. And I was actually in Wisconsin. So I had to leave. I was up there with my son and my grandkids, and I had to leave and drive down to St. Louis. But it was just a 1-hour interview, and talked with my attorney a couple times. Mm-hmm. And he knew nothing about this appointment either, because I called him as soon as I got that.
Wow.
That text in. Did you know about this? He's like, no. So
what did he say to you?
He said no, he knew nothing about it. And he asked me if I had a number to call the psychiatrist just to confirm. And I did. And yes, I did have this appointment, and it was made for me. I don't even remember all the specifics now. But I called him back and told him, yeah, this is what we have. And so he's like, okay, so we're going to prepare. And so he's telling me how to prepare, and it took him a long time to get this through my head. It is not personal. Well, yes, you feel like it's personal. You have to take the personal out of it. There has to be, a work-related cause. And
correct.
So you can find your work-related cause. In my case, it was easy to find my work-related cause, was that I was not getting the staffing I needed in order to clear my operations.
Correct.
And therefore I was being disciplined for something that was out of my control.
There was a causal relationship to your diagnosis.
Yes.
Right.
So, and it took him a long time to get that through my head. But I finally get that through my head. And that is what my focus point is then when I'm talking to the psychiatrist. And also my statement to her was like, I felt like I was tied to the anchor of a sinking ship.
Mm,
and
that's strong.
Yeah. And this is what I'm telling the second opinion doctor. So she writes this up. She concurs with my psychologist, and that, you know, I have avoidance issues. I don't know what they really call that, but I'm avoiding going to the place that causes the trauma, you know?
Correct.
So, yeah, I mean, really, I think it was her.
It was that strong. It was the second opinion doctor that agreed and concurred with your treating doctor, which, again, that they went off your psychiatrist as far as with the NARA report, but your psychologist is the one that had the extensive notes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming they had whatever you, when I'm saying them, I'm the second opinion doctor. Did they have any? They had to have access to your full case.
Yeah.
But I know that all second opinion doctors do not look at the whole case file, because they'll get a shit ton. And some people have so much in their case file that they won't even take a look at it. So I got to ask you, because I always tell everybody, when you go to these second opinion doctors, and some people get third, fourth, fifth, sixth opinion doctor, right? Mm-hmm. That's ridiculous at that point.
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to know if there's a limit that they can only send you out to another opinion for.
But there should be.
I've seen numerous ones. There should be, exactly. It's like they're waiting for it to come back in their favor. Mm-hmm. But it seems that they agreed and concurred, the second opinion doctor, with them. But I always tell everybody, bring treatment notes. So in your case, I would, if I would have known about this and I was your union representative, or I was your representative outside of the union, if I was your attorney, even as your friend, but in this case, you know, a podcaster who's been through it federally speaking, I would tell you, like I tell everybody else, you have to bring your notes. Have to bring your treatment notes, any kind of treatment notes. So in your case, psychiatrist and psychologist, I'd have brought those notes. And the first thing I would have did was give those to him on top to make sure he had those, because they like to play dumb. Now, that didn't happen in your case, which is good.
Yes, since they didn't know about it.
Yeah, no, listen, you did. It seems you did well, but even better, it seems the second opinion doctor did his job. Mm-hmm. He was paid to do a second opinion. And that's exactly what he did. He gave his honest second opinion, medically speaking. So that's good. But to go off on that, it was the second opinion's doctor's agreement and concurring with your treatment doctor, ultimately both of those doctors. And he actually stated that the ICD-10 codes were, you know, acceptable to use in this case. And he even wrote why in his second opinion, correct?
Yes.
Yep. So ultimately, it was that second opinion that probably put you over the finish line there. So wow, that's amazing. So again, people out there who are experiencing any kind of mental illness, whether it be anxiety, depression, PTSD, any of those things, just know that CA2, that's what Melissa used, mm-hmm. the accepted ICD-10 codes that you got accepted were PTSD, which is F as in Frank, 4310, and major depressive disorder recurrent, which is F as in Frank, 339. And anxiety, to the listeners out there, just know that you can also get FMLA for anxiety, because an anxiety is a medical condition, and that is diagnosed by a medical professional that is also treated by a medical professional. But I think that's huge, because a lot of people don't know where to turn to and what to do when they're dealing with this stuff. So
yeah,
I appreciate you sharing all that.
Oh, of course. I mean, I want to help as many people as I can.
Right. No, I believe that this story, your story, is going to do just that. But especially yourself being in management and getting this treatment the same way that we do, day in and day out. I mean, I think we experience it worse than other managers from their own peers. But I think it's a worse thing to see management treating other management like that. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, because they have no respect for their peers, so how are they going to have any respect for their subordinates?
Exactly. It's like a stand-up talk. We talk about dignity and respect. How do you expect management to give you dignity and respect when people on the workroom floor can't even respect themselves or with each other?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so, you know those stand-up talks? I refused to give those after I started experiencing this. I'm like, I'm not giving this. Somebody else can give it, but I am not doing it. I flat out refuse to give the dignity and respect ones and the zero tolerance, because the MDO can give it. I am not getting up there and doing it.
There you go.
And I did not.
Good for you. And honestly, it seems like you really didn't have to, because you didn't have that problem. Your employees that you supervised on your tour, you guys gelled as a team. You worked well. You had your core responsibilities, each and every one of you. You did your responsibilities. And if you were short one of those people or one of those things in the area that needed to get done, all of you guys chipped in there to make sure you still got out in a timely manner. And that's how management, mm-hmm. that's how a place, any place of operation should be ran, any place of business. So again, I don't think you get enough credit for what you've done, because there's good management out there across this country. And it's a shame that you guys are overshadowed by the majority, which is the ones who don't do their jobs, who treat people like shit, who are awful, who give poor, you know, management styles, making toxic environments. So you're very welcome. I think you deserve a lot of credit. And then on top of that, still do what you do for your people that you supervise, in addition to dealing with all that bullshit on top of it. I applaud you. Mm-hmm. If I had an applaud button right now on my computer, I'd be hitting that bitch right now.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank
Absolutely, 100%. Now, before I move on here, I wanted to ask you, I know this may or may not trigger you, and if you don't want to answer it or revisit it, that's fine. You don't have to. But for the audience out there, it's a twofold question. When you first went through all this, all the mistreatment, all the bullshit, how exactly did that make you feel?
How did that make me feel? Oh my gosh. You know, it kind of made me feel like I wasn't, like I was worthless almost. I was starting to feel like maybe what they were saying, maybe it
was
deserved.
So you start to believe what they say.
It was not good. It was not a good feeling. Until I start talking to other people, you know, and realizing that this is not acceptable and this is what's going on behind my back, and realizing, okay, it's not me.
Right.
I'm one of those, I'm a perfectionist. So like if an email goes out that somebody did something wrong, I automatically start thinking, going back through everything that I've done. Like, was that me? very much perfectionist. Right.
And the second part of that question would be, being that you've been through it all, experienced all that, came out on top, how do you feel today? Does any of that you experienced still bother you to this day? Do you have flashbacks? Does it still bother you in the fact that your anxiety, depression, or PTSD triggers every now and then?
Absolutely. I still have it. I will tell you when the strongest triggers are, I avoid going to the post office. I absolutely will not go to a post office. And I mean, I will avoid at all costs. I don't want to go. I don't want to be anywhere near a post office. And when, for whatever reason, if I have to be out in the vicinity of the plant, I start having like physical reactions, you know, like increased heart rate, breathing, all that.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And even though I know I don't have to go back, I'm not going back. I don't have to go back. I still have these reactions.
Yeah. And listen, you've been through a lot. Again, I'm going to be the first to say it in case no one's ever said it to you. You are one tough bitch. And I say that with respect.
Thank you.
The stuff that you went through, I can't give you enough credit because you stayed the course. You put your team first and your responsibilities first, despite being shitted on by your peers and your immediate supervisors that you answer to, being your plant manager and your MDO. So hats off to you. If your people ever listen to this podcast that they worked with you on that tour three there in that plant in Illinois, hey, reach out to her if you got her number and just tell her thank you again, because she deserves all the credit in the world. And you guys helped her get through a very dark time for her at that moment in her life. So, but good job, man.
Thank you.
My hat's off to you. You're welcome. You're very welcome. But moving on here. Now, you, after being out, you went back to work from May of 2019 to January of 2022. Nearly 2 years, give or take. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. Then you filed OPM in August of 2022. I think we discussed this and touched on it a little earlier. While on OWCP roles, and you retired with OPM. So you retired with OPM in January of 2023. Does that sound right?
Yes.
So you're an OPM for about a year when you got OPM before you actually ended up taking a job in the private sector. Is that correct?
Yes, I did.
You want to tell me a little bit about that?
So the job I'm doing now in private sector is completely different from anything that I've done with post office, thank God. I work for an insurance broker, and I can tell you right now, it is the greatest job I have had in my adult life. I am so thankful that I was able to go out on the disability retirement so that I don't have to deal with that anymore, and thankful that I am able to still be able to work on that, because I definitely was not ready to retire. I'm 52, not ready to retire at all. And this manager is a manager like me. Actually, I had sent one of my old clerks, I sent her a text. I said, I finally got a boss that's like me. And I mean, she's appreciative of her team. She lets us know that we are appreciated. I cannot say enough good things about her at all. It's night and day, night and day.
I was just going to say night and day. Yeah. And the funny thing is, as we were talking over these past few weeks, I remember you saying that they came to you, this new job, this insurance broker, that's what you're doing, right?
Yes. Yep.
They asked you, hey, what can we do better to make this place a better place to work? What can we do better to improve? They asked you that, correct?
Correct. They did. Yep.
And what did you tell them? Tell the audience.
I said, you were probably talking to the wrong person. I said, because I came from such a toxic work environment that I think everything you guys are doing is gold. I mean, I don't see any, any processes right. that they need to improve. I don't even know how they could. You know,
yeah, no, listen, I'm happy that you finally found a place where you are appreciated. You're actually included in conversations of how to not only make the place a better place for you to work, but how to improve overall for everybody to enjoy working there. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy that you found that. You got a slice of happiness, if you will, right? Coming from that toxic environment that we all deal with on a regularly in the postal service. So sharing your story here today, you can see how it's personal, the way management was bullying, harassing, targeting you, even retaliating against you. Toxic work environment, again, dignity and respect, zero tolerance, workplace violence. All these are violations against you, maybe from your coworkers, other management. Listen, you're elected to get more done with less help, yep. and you didn't. You were disciplined for it, but you did it. That's what blows my mind. You got more done with less help, yet you were disciplined. Manual parcels were increasing, yet your staff consistently decreased because of them with the scheduling conflict. Mm-hmm. How is that good for business, let alone your employees? I mean, yeah, people were retiring. They weren't being properly scheduled, especially on your tours. Mm-hmm. You dealt with threats of discipline, constantly being held over your head, you know, basically holding you hostage if you didn't get all this shit done yourself and didn't clear. But even if you take all this personal stuff out of it, there's still causation for all the mistreatment, for the cause of all the mental diagnosis that actually you had to deal with at the hands of your coworkers, which is other management. The mm-hmm. facts speak for themselves, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. The facts can be seen, and the facts state that you had a high volume that was steadily increasing. There are facts that can be seen that your staff was decreasing. The facts show that you were being targeted and disciplined for not being able to clear, yet others weren't being disciplined for the same thing.
Right.
But you're being targeted by this plant manager and the MDO who pretty much don't like you. Let's call a spade here.
Right.
I know we won't ever get to the bottom of this why, right? The why factor. But
yeah, we won't.
At this point, yeah, we won't. But I mean, at this point in your life, who cares, right? You're in a happy place right now.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know, and for the last year while I was off waiting for something to, you know, OPM waiting for that, I started to withdraw. I'm like, okay, well, I'm kind of back right where I started from. Only now, instead of OWCP, I went out, you know, and because it's not healthy. It is not healthy. I'm like, I'm avoiding things. I'm avoiding people. I'm avoiding going out. I don't want to do anything. You know, I you haven't heard her. I'm surprised, but my dog, she's a service dog. So I have her trained to be a psychiatric service dog for me. That's not something I ever expected in my entire life to have.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Now, Melissa, is there anything else that you'd like to share about your story that we didn't cover that maybe I missed, you missed?
Not that I can think of. I think we've covered all the good points. I think that, that we've given everybody the horror story. That
right.
even management goes through.
So. Yes, absolutely. I mean, I honestly, I don't think your story gets enough. Everybody's going to feel different once they hear this episode. But for me, I just feel like your story doesn't do it justice enough. and others, and their stories don't do it enough justice as well. But particularly for you, number one, you were in management. And to people out there, I want you to remove that factor. Remove that title that Melissa was a manager. Take into account she's a human being who experienced what you and I experienced in our positions within the federal sector as well. But I think it hits home more to see your coworkers deal with that. To put it in essence, into comparison, it's like one of our coworkers. I was a city carrier. It's like people I'm working for who are rural carriers, or city carriers, you know, when they come in and they fuck with you in a way that you're like, yo, what's your problem? Well, and you hear this all the time, right? And the Postal Service, people preach family. This is a family. No, my family's at home waiting for me to get home from this job. This is a job. This is sometimes a career for certain people. It's a way to make money. Now, does that say you can't have family, you know, work family? No, you can have your work family. But you always hear that term, we're family, family. They preach that term so very loosely. But is there really family? Like, I see too many people kicking each other down when they're down instead of helping them and picking them up when they're having a hard time or they're struggling with something. People rather throw people under the bus and talk shit passive aggressively, directly or indirectly. Doesn't matter. But where is that family that you all talk about all the time? But anyway, Melissa, to people out there listening to this podcast who are going through it right now, whether it be manager, a carrier, a clerk, person in motor vehicle services, person at the plant, person in maintenance. So I mean, I know that's a loose, you know, a term that you don't like to hear right now, maintenance, right? But anybody, whatever craft they're in that they're going through, what would your message be to them that they're struggling right now? Talk to that one person that's listening that actually resonates with your story. What would your message be to them?
My message is, you are not alone. You do not have to go through this alone. You know, there are, advocate for yourself. Advocate for yourself. 100%. For sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And don't let yourself accept being treated that way, because you don't deserve that. Nobody deserves that. And, you know, we got Ron here, who's doing a great job getting everybody's stories out there. And I mean, I don't have the reach that Ron does, but I am certainly also willing to talk and help wherever I can, because nobody deserves this. Nobody deserves to be treated this way.
Right. Absolutely. Well said. Now, on the opposite side of that, I also want to ask you, Melissa, if to the people out there who are listening, who aren't familiar or aren't working within the federal sector, they don't have no clue, especially about working in the Postal Service. You know, let's say it's a politician out there, a news reporter, someone in the media, someone with a position of power who has the authority and the title and the power to help us create the change that is needed. What will your message be to that particular person right now who does and who can help us make that change?
If they can help us make that change, then they need to start making that change. Nothing is going to get better until we stop letting the post office police itself. The post office polices itself. And of course, what's going to happen? The post office is always going to find for the post office that they were not in the wrong. And you can't have that. You cannot have an entity policing itself and expect to come up any other way.
Well said. Well said. Couldn't agree even more with that. Melissa, it has been a privilege to have you on today. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for coming on and sharing your story. I appreciate it. We appreciate it.
And I appreciate you getting our stories out there so that people can start making the change.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Step one is we have to recognize that there's a problem. We got to do that by talking about it. Too many times it's taboo in a way where people don't want to talk about it. They make it taboo. When in reality, it's not taboo. What's taboo is how management is treating us all. And that's what we need to bring to light. And the only way to do that is to talk about it and to bring it to light so that we can talk more about it, recognize there's a problem so that we can come up with a solution. Now, I might have a show one day when people talk about those solutions, and I'm sure I'm going to have to filter out those responses because I'm sure there's going to be a lot of inappropriate things being said with solutions to this issue.
You can only imagine.
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
You know, they just need to clean house, really.
They need to clean house. Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, these bad managers need to start fearing for their jobs.
Yep. Absolutely. I mean, just like they make us fear for our jobs if we do something wrong.
Yep. And not just fearing for their jobs, but fearing for like legal repercussions. I mean, yeah. It's not acceptable.
it's not acceptable. You're absolutely right. I mean, listen, mental illness to me is much worse than a physical injury. Mm-hmm. When someone gets hurt in a job, when we get hurt as federal workers, listen, carriers, we get hurt every day on the job. Let's be honest, man.
Right.
Nearly every day we get hurt. We just don't report it, right?
Right. Yep.
But when we do get hurt and it's catastrophic, the most painful thing, and you'll hear me say this, you'll hear Chris Helms from Federal Injury Center say this, you'll hear others say this as well, people who I interview, the most painful thing is not the injury itself. It's the process during and afterwards we get injured. It's the process itself that's more painful than the injury. And that should not be. However, as painful as that is, mental illness to me is more of an issue than the physical thing, because we can recover mostly from these physical injuries. However, it's the mental illnesses that we sustain from the hands of management and toxic work environments that not only have an effect on our well-being mentally, right, but it also can trigger physical conditions as well. That's why I say it's a greater issue to deal with. And we all deal with it. We just don't report it. Some of us can vent and some of us can, some of us can cope better with the toxic work environments that we deal with on a regular, but make no mistake, we all feel it. Mm-hmm. Men, women, we all feel it. And we were talking about taboo. I think it's taboo for men to talk about their feelings, because as men, it's not manly to talk about our feelings, right?
Right.
Toss that shit aside, man. You know, I know we're taught that love, unconditional love, is only for women, children, and dogs. I get it, right? We're conditioned for that as a society. But when we're going through it as men, we got to share the way we feel. And I'm talking about this because there's an issue that I'm having currently with somebody. Not an issue, but they're having the issue and I'm trying to help them through something. And that's one of the things that has come up. They feel less of a man talking about the way they feel. And listen, and it's at the hands of management. Management can break down my friend, if he wants to come on here, he'll come on. But served in the Marine Corps, has some PTSD, took a job with the Postal Service, is a carrier. Won't mention his name or where he works, but management has beaten him down so bad. And I could feel his pain a little bit because him and I share a little bit of our story together. And he was censored because if he has training, you understand, like he's like me in a way where if there's an issue, we're going to come to you if there's an issue. Does that make us aggressive? No. But how management acts today in the Postal Service, they're going to make you feel like you're the aggressive one when they're the ones that are being passive aggressive and starting shit. But being the type of people, type A personalities that we are, we get shunned and we get looked at like we're the aggressive ones. Therefore, we're censored. That something's got to be done about that. But guys, listen, if you're feeling any type of way, talk to somebody. That's my whole point of saying all that. Talk to somebody, man. Don't let it build up. Don't let management push you to do what they want you to do, which is fly off the deep end, right? I was just talking about this the other day with somebody else in an interview, man. We're the only agency that has a negative slogan to go with our agency, and that's going postal. That's not a good term. That's not a term of endearment. But and that's another taboo thing that we should talk about, right? We go postal for a reason. The toxicity that management promotes within. Start treating us like a human being. You know what I'm saying? But I'm going to close out the show. Again, Melissa, thank you again so much for joining us. Again, it was a pleasure having you on. Absolutely. I'm going to close out the show, as I always do, with some quotes, messages, whatever have you. my first message is to you guys, my listeners, and people who are going through it. Listen, man, in a toxic work environment, your perseverance kind of becomes a silence rebellion that chips away at negativity, right? But always remember that your well-being matters, okay? By focusing on self-care and growth, you can navigate even the most toxic work environments. Now, that doesn't correspond with, well, I shouldn't have to deal with it, right? No, you shouldn't. But remember, you're not defined by your surroundings. Your potential is boundless even in a toxic workplace. And it's true to what they say, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So try not to take out your anger and frustrations on management when shit's going down. Utilize your union. That's right, I said it. Utilize your union, because there are some reps out there that will go to bat for you. I know in most cases they're not there. That's why Melissa said it. That's why I'm going to reiterate it. Be your own best advocate, because at the end of the day, only you are going to be able to do what's right behind you and for yourself, not somebody else. In other words, you can't count on somebody else. You can try to surround yourself with positivity, even within this toxic work environment, but your mindset can shape your experience, right? So stay strong mentally, stay focused, and I guarantee you, you will prevail. And always remember, you are not alone, right? You are not alone. You even heard Melissa say that. To management out there and to unions out there who offer no kind of representation whatsoever, this message goes out to you, and that is, great leaders inspire others by their actions, not just their words. Be the change that you wish to be and see in your team. And perhaps your retention problem can turn into a, no, I don't need anybody else to help us today problem, because we're covered, right? Effective management is not about perfection. Being an effective union leader is not about perfection. It's about the commitment to learn, adapt, and improve, but more importantly, lead. Lead. Union leaders need to do a better job leading and representing our members and leading their national union or their local union for that matter. Management needs to do a better job at leading and managing their offices, right? Challenges are the stepping stones to growth. Embrace them, tackle them, let them lead you through them. When I say let them, I mean let your team lead you through them, right? At the end of the day, you are a team, and you're only as effective as the leadership within that group or organization, in this case, the Postal Service or a union for that matter, right? Leadership is not about being right all the time. It's about making right choices that drive positive outcomes. The best leaders are those who recognize the potential in others and create an environment for that potential to thrive. True leadership is about inspiring your team to achieve greatness, right? Creating a legacy of success. Too many of you out there, management, union leaders, right now, the only legacy that you're creating is a non-existent one, right? Every setback is an opportunity to bounce back stronger. Use these failures as stepping stones towards better management, towards better representation. Because at the end of the day, your success is measured by the success of your team. So invest in their growth, and I guarantee you, you will reap the awards. But until then, get your head out your asses, man. That's all I can say to y'all.
That about does it here for us at Fed Up. Please don't forget to like, follow, and share this podcast. And if you are fed up like everyone else is and want to share your story and experiences, your issues and frustrations, and want your voice to be heard, I invite you to be a guest on this show. There's strength in numbers, and together, by sharing our stories, we can and will make the change that is needed. Just send me an email at one.fedup.podcast@gmail.com. Again, that's the number 1.fedup.podcast@gmail.com, and I'll get back to you as soon as possible. Again, thanks for tuning in. Until next time, stay safe out there, my friends.